Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. As shared in part one of her story, Jessie Buttafuoco is a mental health professional, advocate, speaker, and co-victim of gun violence from Long Island, New York. Her journey in the media began at an incredibly young age as the result of a vicious attack and attempt against her mother's life in 1992. Shortly thereafter, pieces of Jessie's family story would be covered by what felt like every media outlet. However, Jessie's own experiences navigating the media, growing up in the public eye, and healing from prolonged trauma have gone largely unshared. Her goals in imparting more of what came next in her personal journey is to bring awareness to the impact and potential detriment of non-consensual media coverage, offer support to other survivors, and to change the legislative landscape for future generations. The Broken Cycle Media team is incredibly grateful that Jessie was willing to share so much of her over 30-year journey within the true crime landscape with our audience today.
I wound up majoring in sociology. I love people, I love cultures, I love the way people think. I love how where we come from creates who we are. That's always been such a fascinating subject to me. I did not take one psychology course because I was afraid it was going to be too much math and science. I was pulling a 3.8 GPA, and I was doing everything then too. I was on a student that teaches alcohol and other drug responsibility committee. I would go to sororities and fraternities and give presentations on what moderate drinking looks like. They'd be at the party later and I'm pumping the keg. Or doing drug jeopardy at the Alpha Phi sorority house, believing I am broken, but I just don't know what the solution is. And I know this isn't it because the drug use started to impact my voice. I was a really good singer and I can still sing, but I was really good before. My grandmother was an opera singer and I think I have it in the lineage of performing and theater and all that stuff. At that time, my dad was still active in the public eye. I remember freshman year. In the dorms, there was a celebrity boxing moment. Everyone in the dorms watched it, including me, at the one TV that was in the middle of the room. And it was like, oh, that's you. My junior year, I was involved in a SWAT team raid. So this is my dad goes back to jail for auto insurance fraud. I was home for winter break. I wake up at 7 in the morning to a machine gun in my face, like, go sit over there. This was, again, no iPhones yet. I had a flip phone and they wouldn't let me answer my phone when my mom was calling. My mom's worried the whole time. It's on the news now. The helicopter's going around. I was held hostage for like 8 hours. They bring in the search dogs. They're searching everything. It was traumatic and bananas, but at the same time, it was just like, oh, this is today. Like, it wasn't all that traumatic because I've been through so much already. What's fucked up is I saw them 2 days before the raid. I was home and I was jogging in my neighborhood. A car was going by my house really slow. And that's nothing new. That's been happening since the incident. Tourists come by my house and honk and take pictures. And when they find out where they live, it's a thing. So I stopped in front of the car and I was like, do you have a problem? And I like flipped him off. Well, it was like the chief of police because he came the next day without warrant. And I was like, ooh, that was you. So my dad goes back to jail. By this time, he had a new wife. The SWAT team thing happens. He's in jail. Shit gets even worse. I remember one time I had to go visit him and then I had to go back and make it for lacrosse practice or something. I was speeding and I rolled a stop sign. I get pulled over. I like break down. I'm like, I'm sorry. I said I'm dealing with a family emergency. He's like, what's the emergency? I'm like, my family's the emergency. My dad's doing this and I'm just trying to get A's and play lacrosse. And then my dad gets out of jail. I graduated like 3.6. So it turns out I'm a lot smarter than I ever gave myself credit for. Once I graduated is where I think I started to really flounder in life because no one was telling me what to do anymore and no one was giving me the bar to achieve and overachieve. After college, I started working with early childhood education. I went back and took a class on business because I wanted to open up my own business. I wound up for 10 years running a business that facilitated after-school theater programs for kids, ages preschool to high school. It was such a safe place for me to be weird, creative, and also emote and get my feelings out. I wanted to provide that opportunity for kids as well. It was awesome. And I've had thousands of kids under my wing, helping them with stage fright and helping them overcome fear, anxiety. And it was such a meaningful time in my life. In those years, I also did some interesting stuff like producing some YouTube stuff. I was doing a podcast, other creative projects, doing Oprah, doing Dr. Oz, doing Ricky Lake, being on Howard Stern, calling in when Amy Fisher was a guest and she heard I was going to call in. Howard goes, oh, we have Jesse Buttafuoco on the line, Mary Jo's daughter. And she took her headphones off and left the studio and never came back. It's in 2008 top Howard Stern moments. When we went on Oprah, that was awesome, actually, because they wound up helping my mom with like a life lift. Oprah had Amy Fisher on and I wrote to Oprah's show. I was like, I am appalled that you would have a guest like this. You are the queen girl. If you're going to have anybody on your show, you should have someone like my mom. Sent it in, not expecting much. I get a reply back not too long after. Are you really who you say you are? Would you want to come on the show to rebut what Amy had to say? And I'm like, no, I'm not trying to give her any more airtime than y'all already gave her. Eventually, we landed on, I would love to give my mom a life lift because she was 50 at the time. Half of her face was 37 and the other half was drooping. She had a lot of medical issues. She was very self-conscious in taking pictures. So they hooked her up with a bunch of doctors, got her surgeries from head to toe. It was beyond amazing. What's cool about all of this, she wound up connecting with Dr. Azizadeh, who started the Facial Paralysis Institute. And so through that institute, they're able to help people with Bell's palsy and other facial paralysis from tumors and things along those lines. Dr. Azizadeh invented a procedure that gives people their smile back, which is amazing. This doctor was able to go into her face, disconnect the nerves that healed improperly and reconnect them. So now she can actually smile with both sides of her face. It's remarkable. And she was the first person to have that procedure done because he had this idea and he's like, hey, I think I can do it with you. And she's like, let's go. A lot of people are having that surgery now. That was really cool. And flying out and being on Oprah, that was a big deal. It's so interesting because I actually don't remember it. I remember sweating through my armpits, but I really don't remember much of being on stage and meeting her and talking. I've seen the clips afterwards. It's very interesting what your brain remembers and what it doesn't. I think I was just in go mode at that time. I was unhealed. I was unprocessed. I felt like I needed to stand up for my mom in the public eye. I wasn't sharing my story at that point in time. I was telling the story of my parents and what happened to them. It wasn't until I met my current best friend, who's also a producer. She does reality shows. She's a story producer, Emmy winning. She's like my ride or die number one. It was just one of those instant connections. She didn't know who I was. She didn't know my last name. And she worked with a bunch of people that knew me from high school. And they're like, you know Buttafuoco? How do you know Buttafuoco? They're like, what do you mean? That's my friend. How do you know Buttafuoco? They wound up telling her snippets of the story. And she was like, holy shit. I was never one to share my story, ever. I hated my story. It was embarrassing. It was a sex scandal. My dad had a sex tape at 1.2. It just was embarrassing and horrible. Like, you're already embarrassed by your parents anyway. And then to add this public layer of this exploitative sex scandal, murder triangle, I was mortified every second of every day. And the last thing I wanted to do was tell somebody about it. And I certainly wasn't on podcast sharing it. But my best friend really helped open me up in that way and started showing me how powerful my story could be. Not my parents' story, not me retelling my parents' story, what I went through, the mental and emotional effects that I dealt with, the resiliency that I've had to show throughout my life, and how many times I've been knocked down. But throughout that time, my drug use and my substance use continued. Eventually, it became daily use. I was drinking 2 bottles of wine a day. Eventually, depression started to creep in, and that's something that I never understood and or had before. If I let myself cry, it was for 2 seconds, and then I put on a nice front. But at 35 years old, I just really couldn't take it much anymore.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I just couldn't function. I couldn't pretend things were fine anymore. Mail was piling up, roaches in my apartment. Incapable of taking care of myself, barely showing up to my responsibilities. I was isolating from my friends, isolating from my family. I just didn't want anyone to see me like that. I was just sitting, watching Law and Order and local news on repeat, absorbing so much negativity. My mind was a tornado of racing thoughts, all negative. You're ugly, you're worthless, hopeless, fat, lazy, and wishing I was dead. Praying to God every night, please don't let me wake up tomorrow. And every morning I'd wake up and curse the universe. Now, knowing what I know about psychology, I was weeks away from killing myself. I was also experiencing a lot of physical issues. I stopped eating. I wasn't drinking any water. I was extremely dehydrated. My nails were concaving in. I couldn't button things up. My cognitive abilities were gone. I'd mix up words. I was having a hard time speaking. I lost interest in a lot of things. And I didn't know what was going on with me. And it turns out I was experiencing a major depressive episode. And it hit hard. It was really scary. I wound up starting a journey of recovery. I rolled into the rooms of AA. For me, that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, was admit that my drinking's a problem and that I'm not perfect. Because my whole life was under the excuse of I can't let everything that happened to me make me an alcoholic or fuck up my life. I walked in those rooms and I started hearing for the first time people feeling the way I felt inside. I was in the Studio City AA, so there was some notable figures in there too, where I'm like, oh, you're famous and you're dealing with this. I was among individuals that I felt for the first time in my life a part of. I've always been the center of the donut. I've never felt like I can connect to anybody because I've always been different because of my circumstances. But in the rooms of AA, it turns out people's feelings are kind of similar. The roots in which we get to those feelings are different. But at the end of the day, both you and I can feel sadness. Both you and I can feel shame. Your shame is different from my shame, but we both feel it. And so when people started talking about those things, it really helped me start to forgive myself for even having those feelings. I never really let myself experience anger, frustration, any bad feeling. I put bad in air quotes. I just stuffed or I pushed aside. I didn't cry for years. I stuffed it all down. And so once I stopped drinking, all of those feelings came back up, every single one of them. And I did not know what to do. And I was angry. I continued to plummet. Just because I quit drinking, my life didn't get better because I no longer had that coping mechanism. My life circumstances were still my life circumstances that I had never healed, never got therapy for. So 8 months go by and I'm attending weekly meetings. I'm starting to at least open my mind of there are people in these rooms that seem to have their shit together. Just because I don't right now doesn't mean I won't one day. Once I realize I'm still ready to kill myself, it was in August of 2018. I decided to check myself into an intensive outpatient program for mental health and substance use. At the time, I didn't even know these things existed. I just thought like, oh, you have a therapist. That experience humbled my ass because I had a hard time having my name on that roster. I was like, can you please make me anonymous here? No, sorry, we don't have the paperwork. I was like, can you cross it out? And that was my biggest fear. If someone's going to find out I'm here and then someone's going to call the Inquirer, it's going to be a news story. And that's what prevented me, I think, from seeking help for a long time because I just couldn't have that headline. So that was a challenge, but it turned out to be such a blessing for me. It normalized my experience, normalized the way I was feeling and behaving, not excusing it, but gave me an explanation of what's going on. I was able to learn about the brain, which was helpful because I was like, why can't I just stop? I was like, oh, addiction, there's like things going on here. Started to learn about trauma. It's the first time I actually started to even call my circumstances traumatic because I didn't go to war. So I was like, it's not trauma. Psychology has taught me that we react in certain ways. That really started to help me make a little shift and also share my story. All this stuff that I'm telling you right now so easily was so hard for me to say. And it was so difficult to even be truthful about that dark side of me. It was rough. And it took years. I started piecing my story and pitching it a little bit. This could be a cool documentary, maybe. I've been in the entertainment industry, not just because I'm the family member of a victim of crime that was in the spotlight. Your girl can sing and dance, queen. I'm just waiting for my Dancing with the Stars moment when I can get that Mirrorball trophy, girl. I've always loved to perform, being creative. I was that way coming out the womb. But I've had to build myself up and prove myself for who I am as an individual. In 2019, I had done an ABC 2020 special called Growing Up But a Fuco. And it was supposed to be about my story and what I've been through. It was a little bit of that and a lot about my parents' case and stuff like that. Whenever specials like this happen, it tends to rock my family. People have feelings, people's lives get affected. I understand. It just is par for the course. So my dad was not getting well received. He texts me and says, I can't believe the amount of stress you've put me through. I never want to speak to you again ever, period. When I tell you, my eyes were like them big emoji eyes and my mouth dropped and I was like, the audacity. You can't believe the amount of stress I've put you through? You never want to speak to me again? Fine. Blocked, blocked, blocked him on everything. I don't care. Turns out that was actually a very hard thing. I needed to grieve that relationship. I had already grieved the loss of the relationship I was never going to have with him. I'm choosing to end this. And this was hard for me. when I had to deliver that boundary, I thought about it. I talked to my therapist about it. I wrote a lovely email of like, I just can't trust you to change. So I need to protect myself from you. I can't trust that you will not make a poor choice that will affect my mental health very greatly. And I love myself enough now and I care about myself enough now to protect myself. You are the common denominator to most of my problems. It was still like, if I press this button, I don't have a dad anymore. Granted, I didn't have a dad anyway in terms of an ideal one, but still, he's still alive. I'm still a human being. And so I asked for signs. Am I doing the right thing over here? I'm sitting at my desk ready to press send. And all of a sudden, 16 birds are right there on the grass in front of my window that I'm looking out. And they're mourning doves. So they're a message of peace and like, we're with you. Move on, girl. So I was like, all right, spirit squad, I see you. Because I think everyone in my life that has moved on, they're on my spirit squad now and they're looking out for me. And so I press send and girl, every bird just flew away. And so I was like, all right, I knew this is the right choice for me. When the pandemic happened, it finally brought the rest of the world down to where I was, which was doing nothing at home with a fresh start. I was back to the starting line with everyone else in a weird way. Pandemic forced my business to close. School shut down. The one thing I thought would never shut down, shut down. I was not going to be the one to invent how musical theater operates online. I was in a state of depression, suicidal ideation. I said, this is not my job today. I wound up doing AA online every day all of a sudden. And then I was really connecting with people and I was taking roles in that organization. It was helpful for me because I continued to hear stories of people absolutely losing their shit and then building their life back up. AA for me provided solutions, which was very helpful to me at that time. I had a choice to make. What do I do now? A little voice in the back of my head go, maybe you should go back to school. And thank God I had done enough healing that I could hear that voice. Before that, there were way too many voices in my head screaming all this negativity that I couldn't hear the real me underneath it. And once I cleared out that shame, guilt, and I really started holding my own self with more compassion and empathy, I was able to hear my inner voice. Since quitting drinking 6 years ago, my life has significantly gotten better. I figured out what my values were. I was so used to being a people pleaser. I had no clue what I liked in life. I literally had to figure out the basics. What is my favorite color? It's hot pink and gold and sparkly glitter. What is my favorite movie? It's Sister Act 1 and 2, Back in the Habit. So I had to learn what my values were, and I had to start living by them. And so the inner voice, go back to school. I talked to my therapist about it. I talked to my friends about it, my family about it. I did not have much faith in myself, but I was like, let's just see if I get in. There was an online program at Pepperdine. I was like, all right, when is the application? Application's due in 7 days. And I just wrote, I am 37 years old. I decided to go back to school. I think I'll do a good job. I've been working with kids. This is what I want to do in the future with true crime and psychology and the media. I wrote, listen, I went to UCSB. Amy Fisher got out of jail. I was in a SWAT team raid. I was an alcoholic and I still got a 3.8. So if I could do that then, I can probably do really good at your school now because I don't have any of that bullshit in my life. So like, if you want to take a chance on me, I'll take a chance on you. Let me know. It was very informal. So I sent it in and then I got accepted. And I was like, oh shit, I guess I'm going back to school. And then I went back to school full time for clinical psychology. I originally wanted to focus on media psychology because I saw what my parents were put through. I saw my mental health outcomes because of the exploitation of my parents, the media and all that. But when I went into Pepperdine, they didn't offer that. And so I took the more clinical route on how to be a hands-on, one-on-one therapist, which turned out to be great. It really helped me heal my own trauma. And it's given me such insight, especially to the kids of today. I got a master's degree, 4.0, no cheating queen. Because it turns out if you have a clear mind, you don't need to cheat because you believe in yourself. I still have imposter syndrome, but we're working on that. But I was able to get through it and I liked what I was learning. I like to say I got a master's degree in healing my trauma because the degree was all about writing, researching, and looking at my life and my family's life through a psychological lens. it was a lot because I had to look at my dad's behavior under the guise of psychology, not just as my dad making poor choices. And then I had to look at my trauma responses as actual textbook things, not just me having a hard time. For me, it was very helpful because it made my experience scientific. My dad, I was able to understand him more and forgive him more and not hold so much anger towards him because I see him now as someone with a personality disorder with faults. And it just really helped me, I think, clear a lot of resentment. I'm able to understand, hold empathy for. And I also was able to cut him out of my life and hold boundaries and communicate directly and saying, listen, thank you for the times that were lovely. And thank you for putting that roof over my head, putting me 3/4 of the way through college till that SWAT team raid came and they froze your accounts. I acknowledge the good times, but in order to protect my peace, I have to not have you a part of my life anymore. He doesn't like that. That's fine. And he'll continue to reach out, but I'm done living under the shame of his umbrella, plain and simple. Just to show you where you can go in 6 years. 6 years ago, I was ready to die and kill myself. And now I'm a therapist working at an intensive outpatient program for teenagers who are suicidal and homicidal. So it gets better, but you have to work for it. My mission now, after graduating with a master's degree in psychology and working as a therapist for the last few years, I'm now pivoting because it turns out being a therapist is really hard. I'm very good at it, but what I'm not good at is dealing with the heavy emotions that it comes with for me. I'm still new to the game when it comes to understanding emotions. I only started at 35 and I'm 42. So I've only been understanding emotions and processing them myself for the last 6 years or so. I was experiencing too many negative mental health effects for me. A lot of the kids I was working with reminded me of Amy Fisher. I would put a lot of pressure on myself. If I don't help these kids, they're going to kill somebody or they're going to kill themselves. I just needed to pivot my own mental health journey too. So now I'm in a PhD program. I'm studying media psychology and I'm focusing on how the true crime genre affects victims of crime. My dream is to conduct research about it, make it scientifically published in peer-reviewed journals, connecting negative mental health outcomes to the exploitation nature of true crime media in hopes of creating psychological safety measures in the field and creating legislation to protect victims of crime in the media.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
I'm focusing on how the true crime genre affects victims of crime. What really got me was the Uvalde school shooting. They interviewed some preschooler. They just had the camera on his little feet. Every time that four-year-old is going to enter his name into Google, that interview is going to haunt him the rest of his life. When I Google my name, Amy Fisher comes right up. That's not fair. I've had to deal with this my whole life. I want to participate on the internet without having this shown up in my face. There's got to be ways to protect the legacy of crime victims better, I think, in the news when it comes to actual onset behavior. There's some people doing it ethically, but for the most part, the true crime industry is very exploitative and just take, take, take. There's been times where I'll be saying something sensitive and a helicopter will drive by and they say, oh, can you do that again? Things like that. Like, why don't you get a soundproof room? This is sensitive content we're talking about. Or can you do that again, but can you cry? I was doing my ABC 2020 special. I come out of hair and makeup looking hella good, girl. I was ready for the pageant. My makeup was on point. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling confident. I was narrating that episode, so I was looking directly in the camera, saying lines and stuff. I come out of the hair and makeup, and one of the producers go, ooh, can we make her look less pretty? We need her to be relatable. And so I should have said, I look great, let me do my thing. But instead, I went to the makeup, and they dimmed me down. A lot of times, crime victims are not media trained at first, so they don't really know what they're doing, and they get exploited in that way. There's been times myself where I wish I didn't talk about something, or I should have spoke up for myself, but I didn't feel like I could. But if someone like me was on set, I could make everyone feel better and supported and safe. I think they need to offer aftercare. At least 6 sessions with a therapist needs to happen to decompress from all that, because they butter you up nice. They take you out to dinner. They take you to lunch. They put you in a hotel. Then they take your story and then they say, bye. And they barely even tell you when it's going to air. They don't tell you when it's going to re-air. I think that needs to be a part of the project too, because how many times have I just turned on Hulu to go watch a movie and all of a sudden I see my face on the screen or my parents' face or Amy Fisher's face? So I could even maybe inform my family that my special's airing again. So just be aware, because people at their work talk, hey, I saw your niece or I saw your sister-in-law. There's just room for growth.
Can you also mention the legislation that you had worked on?
I listened to my inner voice and it said, let's try to do some legislation. I had a vision of the Protection of Crime Victims in the Media Act. I had proposed the legislation 2 years ago, sent it to my local council member, sent him a letter. I said, hey, I had this idea. How do I do this? They sent me a proposal form. I filled it out and I sent it to them. They said they sent it off to Congress staff. I would like training for all content creators, producers, directors in the true crime genre to how to be psychologically safe themselves as well as take care of their subjects. So I think there needs to be mandatory training in that. I also think there needs to be some sort of window, like 24 hours to 48 hours before putting people on camera after a tragic event in regards to witnesses at crime scenes, things like that. There's room for a lot of improvements everywhere. That's why I'm in school now, to create the research. Because if it's data, then you have to do something about it. If it's scientifically proven that your behavior is causing victims of crime further harm, then we need to do something about that. The only reason I'm here is because this all almost took me out. I was ready to go, y'all. And now that I'm healed, I don't want anyone else to have to go through that. There's a great book out right now. It's called The Anxious Generation. The author is a researcher. And he's finding that the phone-based childhood is creating a scene for kids to where they constantly feel like they're on stage and it constantly feels like a minefield ready to blow at any moment, ready to go viral, ready to get a negative comment, things like that. And that is connected to anxiety, suicidal ideation, depression, eating disorders, all these negative mental health outcomes. So that research is happening now and it's prevalent. I grew up that way. I grew up at a time before smartphones, so before social media, but my experience felt very much the same at that age. From 9 years old on, I felt very much on stage. Under scrutiny, public opinion, I was getting real-time hate in my face. It looked different, but it had the same effect. We don't know what the long-term effects of social media are on children. We're starting to see, but we really don't know. Well, I'm here to tell you, suicide rates are insane. Everyone's experiencing that, and that's what's scary. And I'm not even just guessing. I've been working with the teenagers. I was in a high school working as a school therapist. I'm in the program talking to suicidal kids every day and what their problems are. It's a really tough life for even adults to live right now, and the kids are really going through it. What's that going to mean in 10 years? In 30 years? What we're doing now is just a big-ass experiment, and it's terrifying.
You're supposed to be finding yourself, not right. Curating yourself.
Oh, I like that. Girl, that might be the topic of my book, A Curated Childhood, or My Adverse Life.
Speaking of that, something I always love to touch on is healing modalities.
I was in individual therapy years before. Dr. Deb, shout out. She was my first therapist. I've been with her for a very long time. I started talking with her in my mid-20s, and then I dipped when it got too challenging. Then I got back in. It just worked. She's older. She's a doctor. She's got her degree. I needed that professionalism for me personally. I have found very helpful narrative psychology to share my story through a psychological lens, clear a lot of shame, clear a lot of guilt, take my story back, tell my story, not my parents' story. Social psychology was also very helpful to me in learning about it. I don't really necessarily have interventions from that theoretical framework, but just understanding how society affects the human being from the inside and all of our choices, who we are and how we develop. Learning about that was helpful to me because society played such a huge role in my personal development. Once I just started to understand how my own brain was working, it just created a little distance between my immediate reactions to that, which was usually drugs, alcohol, avoidance, anger, or yelling. I don't live in a reactive state anymore. It's really nice. I bought a season pass to Six Flags and I screamed my head off on roller coasters. I did join a women's basketball league that's starting next week. I'm probably gonna bust my ass in, but that's that community aspect. That's being physically active. I'm just trying new things. I do yoga now. I've calmed down a lot. Every day I focus on healing and protecting my peace. I charge my crystals every moon. I keep them in my pocket. I connect with the universe. I talk to friends. I don't isolate. I get out. I do love Mayim Bialik's podcast. I listen to her a lot. It's very informative. At this point in my life, I'm pivoting from therapy and I'm writing my memoir. I'm focusing on being a motivational speaker and a presenter. I'd like to start presenting workshops to producers and content creators on how to be psychologically safe while working in true crime. I'm in a transitional period of my life at this moment. I'm calling it a spiritual sabbatical because I'm seeing friends and I'm filling my heart. I'm going on hikes and I'm connecting with nature. I'm just living within my means and not making poor choices. It's just really lovely. I feel like I'm at the beginning of something new. Do you know High School Musical? Where it's the start of something new. Anyway, it's a good one. I'm 42. My mom's 69 this year. We have both cut my father out of our lives. After the divorce and after all that, she did find love again. She did find someone that made her feel special, who was also a great father figure to me at a time where my dad was off the rails. And so that was really cool to have her experience that. She did say, like, who's going to want me now? First of all, look at who my ex-husband is and then all of her physical injuries on top of that. But we love Stu. He's no longer with us. May he rest. His whole family took me under their wing. My mom, I mean, we spent holidays together. So it was really special. And I have three younger step-siblings as well that I still have relationships with. Now it's really cool because my mother and I actually cohabitate together. She had some health concerns that concerned me. And so I was like, I want to be closer to her for my own anxiety. Throughout the years, she's had to get other surgeries because her body's aging or things healed improperly. And let me get this plain and clear. She's very capable of taking care of herself. She goes to the gym every day. She juices. She still is in immense pain all the time and has a constant ringing in her ear and things like that. But she takes care of herself in the best of her ability. However, over the years, my brother and I have taken on the role of helping take care of her. One of those roles for me in particular has been the medical part. After that facial surgery, I'm the one cleaning the blood tubes out, changing the bandages, and driving her to the appointment and waiting for her and freaking out inside. I think that part of the journey people don't think about either is what came next. You don't just get shot one day and then your life is fine. The life of a gun violence victim and their family and even their community at large is greatly affected, and it's an everyday thing. And it changes throughout the years. It's been over 30 years now, and I've seen how the bullet has affected my mom's health and lifestyle. That's a very long time, and it started out with, oh, you can't go on roller coasters anymore because if that bullet moves, you'll be paralyzed, to a lifetime of now there's heart conditions. She only has one carotid artery, so her heart's working triple time. Facial paralysis, and just the physical effects alone of a bullet and what it can do to somebody. So we decided to move in together, and it's actually been amazing. It was rough in the beginning because we were just two old single ladies with our own ways of doing stuff. And I was still in my mental health journey. But now we're able to make up for a lot of lost time. And it's really cool. We can sit and watch TV together and sing together and joke, but then also have really poignant conversations about the past. She's been helping me heal and I've been helping her heal. And it's just been lovely. I'm almost out of my healing era, and I'm in the like, let's do shit now. I do daily maintenance. I'm doing a lot of creative projects. I'm doing some hosting things I can't really talk about right now. And I'm doing shit in the true crime space that doesn't involve me just retelling my parents' story.
And where can people find you if they want to follow along?
I'm on Instagram at Jesse Buttafuoco at Instagram. So JesseButtaFuoco.
You are amazing. You are exemplary of my whole mission. You have lived this for so long and you have had such little consent and control over your journey. I'm so moved and inspired by your ability to keep reinventing and rebalancing the sounding board, finding yourself over and over again. You are a true inspiration and motivation, and I told you, you have been since middle school.
Thank you so much for allowing me space to come and share my story, and I just really appreciate you and reconnecting after all these years from our middle school adventure. I appreciate all the work you're doing too and highlighting what comes next after you are in the public eye as a victim of crime, because it's a crazy, wacky journey. And I appreciate you giving people the ability to shed insight on what it's like to live it. A lot of people have opinions about it, and some people don't have nice opinions about it. People can have their opinions, but it's an important part of our story as survivors that people are becoming more aware of, but it's something that's not really out there. So I appreciate you for even having this platform. So bravo, queen.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
We talked about a wedding date, me planning a move out there. We are moving in together. We had talked about kids' names, all these things. We had a life planned, and I had received a text message from him, and he just said, hey, this has all been moving really fast. I think I need to take some time for myself. I got that text message. It was just the most hollowing feeling. I knew it was over, and I knew something very bad had happened.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.